We are on to SBRM.
All right. Thank you, Doug Potts from the Northeast Regional Office. I've been asked to keep this as short as humanly possible and actually cut it down, actually my entire presentation out, in order to try to catch up. So we're discussing the alternatives for analysis from the 2012 SBRM. I'm going to actually just run through a lot of these, skip most of the slides as I've been told to. We can go back if there's questions. And this is hard to read, but this is actually the full list of alternatives that the FMET has considering for analysis in the draft amendment that would come back for the council's review at the November meeting. Since the last summer, the 2011 is when the appeals court vacated the 2007 SBRM amendment. It found errors or problems only with the prioritization process of the amendment, which is element 6. It's on the right column. Most of the task of the FMET has been only to address that priority, just to address the problems with the prioritization process, and then any other problems that could be addressed that were raised by the 3-year FMET review, that also the SBRM review that occurred also last summer. The new items under the prioritization process, it's being broken down into 2 segments. One is a trigger, how we identify what money is available to SBRM in any given year. The options we're putting forward would be a status quo, the 2007 SBRM amendment option that considers any available funding, look at it, consider what priorities are involved in that funding, and then determine whether or not there's enough funding to meet the 30% standard, the CV standard. The second option would be to use specific congressional budgetary line NOAA funding items. Specifically, it would have a formula built into the amendment that is, 100% of funding that is dedicated to the Northeast Fishery Observer Program, and then percentages of, there's an Atlantic Coast funding line, which has been divided historically between New England, sorry, the Northeast, the Southeast, and headquarters. We would have a specific percentage that meets the historical percentage of that that's been sent to the region. There's also a national funding line that's been divided among all 6 regions. It would be the historical level of that. So there would be a set funding allocation formula in the amendment that could then be used and predictably to find out what funding would be available each year. The second half of prioritization is how we adjust C days if that trigger is met. If there is sufficient funding to hit all of the fleets at 30% CV, in part that 6B would not occur in that given year. But if there is sufficient funding, this is how allocations would be, C days would be reassigned. The first one is a status quo, as according to the 2007 SBRM amendment, in consultation with the councils, and but it gave a lot of discretion to the agency to reassess by various priorities that are available. But that is what the court found problem with, that there was too much discretion on the agency's part. It was unpredictable from one year to the next. At the June council meeting, I came and talked to them about some of the other alternatives that we've developed as an FMAT. One is this proportional adjustment, which just finds out what's the percentage shortfall in funding and applies that across the board to all the fleets. The second one we've called this penultimate cell approach, and I could talk more about it, but we talked some about it in June, where we try to hit those particular combinations of fleet and species group that require the highest number of days, and it tries to get the most bang for the buck, as it were, to eliminate those and go with the next highest needed sea days for that. The end result of that is actually that the fewest number of species combinations end up with CVs above the 30% performance standard. In addition to prioritization, the only other things that the FMET has come up with for new things, under the analytical techniques, item number 2, there's a new option C that we would be considering that is use of the importance filters but removes what's called the unlikely or gray cell filter. The 3-year review that was done last year was found that additional filter was unnecessary and redundant with other filters that are used. Number 5, framework adjustment provisions, there would be a new option where There would not be a requirement for council formal action to add new fleets to the SBRM. I believe that under the 2007 amendment, the council would have had to take formal action to add a new fleet. It just delays things for about a year while those fleets are already in use in the fishery. This would allow us to add those fleets, notify the council, or the SBRM to add those, notify the council, and then get those in action so that they increase the precision of discard estimates. And the other thing is in the reporting requirements, which are under item 4, it's not really a new option. There would be some changes to the items in the annual report to the council, change those to be a little more council-friendly. The focus of the reports would be on total discards extrapolated out rather than just observed discards. It's a slight change from the previous amendment. That's about as fast as I can go through. All the other options are the same as in the 2007 SBRM amendment, but we would be reanalyzing and bringing the draft amendment forward at the November meeting, then expecting to have a comment period and then final, hopefully final passage of a final amendment at the April meeting to then be implemented. I have additional slides that do more explaining of this if anybody has questions to go back, but I'm happy to take questions. And that's as fast as I could get through.
Thank you. Well done. David Pierce.
Just a quick question. Number 7, industry-funded observer programs, does that refer to brownfish sector management? And
It's not specific to that. The what's set up in the currently what's in the regulations, there are no provisions about industry-funded observer programs except for the scallop program. This puts in provisions that would facilitate the use of industry-funded observers in some other action in the future. So it would set up as 7.2 the requirements of an observer provider so that those are known and already published, and it would also set up, allow for framework provisions to add industry-funded observer programs, that those would then be developed separately under whatever action the council chose at that time. So it doesn't implement any new observer programs, but it sets up the framework needed or the underpinnings for an industry-funded observer program.
And then I'll just highlight one concern that I have, and I mentioned this last time someone came before us to talk about the plans relative to the fleet, and that it's broken down by, as I guess it must be, Longline, New England, Autotrol, Syncule, Net, and that's fine, it's a fleet, but at the same time, now we're managing groundfish with sectors, and the point I raised before and I raise again is that every sector basically is a fleet, comprised of different vessel and gear types. So it's a tremendous problem for the whole SBRM concept in terms of coming up with estimates of bycatch. I don't know how we're ever going to deal with this. I think it's an unresolved problem, one that's a real thorny one, and until we can address it in a meaningful way, that is sector management and the curious nature of every fleet, I think we're going to be getting good information from the using the SBRM, but it'll be inadequate regarding what's happening within individual sectors across all gear types. At least that's my perspective.
Tom.
I'll talk fast because it's getting late. What we try and do is we try and keep separate the sector monitoring issues with respect to what's going on within a sector from the SBRM issues. So the SBRM is sort of a broad range program that covers all fisheries. In the groundfish plan, we're dealing with the at sea monitoring issues with sector monitoring. And the regional office actually does prepare and provides to the PDT, they did for fishing year 2010, they presumably will for fishing 2011, estimates of discards within each sector. So that stuff does get evaluated through a separate process that's going on rather than the SBRM process.
Any other questions for Doug? Dave Gatham.
Yeah, Doug, we had a discussion at the groundfish committee about the CV, and at least with groundfish. Now, it was 30% across the board. Is that correct?
That would still be the same under these assessments. That's what was in the 2007 amendment and was the directive of the council back in April to not adjust that.
Okay, so so if we wanted to adjust it in groundfish, we'd how would we can adjust it, or it would be a separate action, or this is where we get hung up the last time. Here comes Tom again.
It is a frameworkable item under SBRM, but at this point it would delay moving this action forward if we were starting to change, tinker more of the innards of it. That wasn't the directive of the FMAT at this point, so there hasn't been any analysis to change that yet.
Again, the idea here is to keep sector monitoring requirements separate from the SBRM. And so the SBRM establishes a 30% CV, and that requirement is really meant for, you know, assessment purposes and other reasons. So, you know, when we adopted that as a standard in Amendment 16 for sectors, in part it was because it was the only standard out there that we could grab hold on quickly. And it, as you know, at the Groundfish Committee meeting, there's been some discussion, and hopefully the PDT will bring forward some ideas on perhaps a different standard to use for determining the appropriate level of coverage for sectors. And so we would have, it could very well be overlapping, where on the fleet level, under the SBRM, the way the SBRM works, we're trying to achieve a 30% CV across the fleet. That wouldn't change. But it could be that within the sector monitoring program, we might apply a different standard. We may base our sector monitoring coverage at the individual sector level or at the stratum within the sector level at something different than a 30% CV. And I think that would still be allowed. These two would perhaps interact in strange ways that we haven't clearly thought out. You know, you would still be bound on the fleet as a whole, the fishing mode or fleet as a whole at the 30% CV. But, for example, in an individual sector, potentially, you know, the hand gear guys may not be bound by a 30% CV. Now, that's a concept. We don't have any details, you know, and we're still working that out in the groundfish world. But I guess to repeat myself, we're trying to keep the groundfish monitoring issues separate from the SBRM overall program issues, perhaps not entirely successfully.
Okay, well, that's fine, and that sounds good. I just want to make sure we don't get into a position where one measure has something that basically prevents something from happening in the other measure. In other words, you know, we're locked into something because, you know, we did it in one place, and now we can't undo it. So that you know, I want to maintain flexibility to the degree that we possibly can in case we wish to do something in a particular management plan.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I think the one thing that would happen here is that if the SBRM calls for a 30% CV on large mesh otter trawls leaving from New England ports, that standard would still be held up. You know, we couldn't say we're not going to have any observer coverage on sector because that SBRM standard would still apply for the fishing mode. I just want to make that clear.
This is where I sometimes get confused. The SBRM is not at sea monitoring. Right? It's
not the sector monitors, the ATSI sector monitors. Right. It's the NEFOP.
Right. I know most people think an observer is an observer, but you know, there is actually quite a difference.
Any other questions? Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Doug and the FMAT, for all the work you've done, especially thank you for your concise report. And I put a motion to move this along. And I move to approve for analysis the list of SBRM alternatives as presented by the FMAT.
Seconded by Mary Beth.
Gibbs got his hand up.
Eventually. I'm just waiting until we got it up to make sure it's correct. And then, Gibb, you can get much come up to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Doug. It's a lot easier to follow along when it's not on a conference call. A couple of comments on things. This is a noticeable improvement over the last SBRM, but there are still some things that are missing from this that make a significant difference to the management of the fisheries. First is the lack of consideration of accuracy. As we heard at the Ground Fish Committee meeting the other day in the analysis, that if you focus only on precision, you're precisely wrong, that your bycatch estimates may all be clustered in with one another and be precise, but they may be entirely off the mark. And as we're dealing with things like retrospective patterns in a lot of these assessments, and from everything I've heard, that one of the root causes of retrospective patterns is not having a handle on your bycatch information, this needs to be considered. We need to have a better handle on what's being caught on all parts of catch, whether it's landed or discarded. And so continuing to move on without any consideration of accuracy or bias is a big mistake, and I think is going to continue the problems that we have in the stock assessments. So I'd encourage the council to at least consider that as an option in this SBRM and everything else looking at monitoring of these fisheries. That's a much different beast than the CV that's in here. The other one is the treatment of fleets. And Dr. Pierce brought this up, that it's very general. That it, for example, mid-Atlantic otter trawls, we have no idea what fishery that belongs to, what fishery that boat is participating in. All we know is that gear is being used, and that boat was home-ported somewhere in the mid-Atlantic. We have no idea. So when the bycatch estimates come back like they did earlier this month, and we have a very large number of very large amount of bycatch that's happening in this region, we have no way of applying management solutions to the fisheries that may be causing these things. The overall number coming out of the Science Center earlier this month, 156 million pounds of discards in the Northeast region. That's the number that came out in the Science Center report earlier this month. That's an extraordinarily large number. And we have no idea. We can trace it back to the fishery mode, but there's no way of finding where the problem is being caused or even coming and applying that, applying solutions, looking for solutions to minimize this. As we all know, National Standard 9 says we need to minimize it. We don't need to just count it. We need to minimize the bycatch. And the SBRM, as it's laid out right now with the fleet construction, doesn't give us the ability to minimize. So I'd encourage the council to put in some sort of a connection to the fishery management plans so we can start looking at where this bycatch is happening, why it's happening, and start looking for solutions. But the fleet construction right now just doesn't do the job. So thanks very much.
Tom Neese. Yeah, I'm not trying to make this a point-counterpoint with Gib, but just to fill you in a little bit on some of the discussions at the FMAT. This question of discards by FMP is one that is of interest to both the New England Council and the Mid-Atlantic Council staff that were on the FMAT. Both Rich Seagraves and I raised this point very early in the discussions because it's helpful to managers if we have a better idea by FMP than if we do by mode. And with some of the fishing modes, you can do that very easily. Scallop dredge, for example, is very easy. Midwater trawl, it's relatively easy to figure out, not real easy, but relatively easy to figure out what fisheries are involved. When you start talking about the otter trawls, it becomes a little bit more difficult. And the FMAT, a couple of us on the FMAT actually spent a considerable amount of time trying to see if there was a way we could actually figure out how to do this. And the short answer is we really didn't come up with a good way to be able to do this on a reliable basis. It's something that I think, you know, long term we would like to get better at and be able to figure out, but we just don't really have a method. You may recall during the groundfish discussion we talked about trying to do this for the Southern New England Winnowing Flounder AMs and kind of threw up our hands because when you have boats on multiple fisheries, it becomes difficult to try and do this. So this is something that we did take a look at and we tried to figure out and really couldn't. The other thing is with respect to precision, I don't know if it's, I'm sorry, with respect to accuracy, I'm not sure if it's
it's been published yet, but you know, that not really the FMAP, the Science Center more than the FMAP, spends a lot of time on the three-year report for the SBRM. And this, the latest version of the three-year report, which should be out soon, it's got a lot of analyses in it that are not exactly what the Groundfish PDT tried to do, but try to look at the issue to see, you know, do we have a problem where the either the observer coverage is wrong, not apply the right or whatever, so where we're getting monitoring effects or we're not getting the accuracy that we want out of it. And as I recall, the draft document, the general conclusion is that in the vast majority of the fishing modes that are in there, you know, the metrics that were examined really don't indicate that there are a lot of differences or huge differences between observed and unobserved trips. Now, you notice I didn't say all of the modes, because there's some of them where I think you got to look at the data and you might raise some questions that we need to dig into further. But, you know, we looked at a lot of things like distribution of fishing effort on observed and unobserved trips, and kept all on observed and unobserved trips in the different modes. And in a lot of cases, those numbers plot almost right on top of each other, whether they're an observed or unobserved trip. So, you know, there's a lot of effort on the FMAT to try and keep track of some of this, or try and dig into some of these accuracy things. And I, you know, frankly think this is going to be an ongoing process as we go forward.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? Sixteen in favor, opposed, abstentions, carried. Thank you, Doug. Is there any other business? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At risk of keeping us here for a few minutes, I do have one motion, and it's following the many comments that we were concerning the Yellowtail stock assessment and the SSC report. And the motion is that the council requests the Northeast Fisheries Science Center expedite development of guidance for one, an objective set of criteria to determine the validity of an assessment for the purpose of setting catch advice, and two, a protocol for setting catch advice in circumstances when the validity of an assessment is rejected.
Is there a second? Or I'm going to go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor? 15. Opposed? Abstention? You opposed? Were you asleep?
She fell asleep.
It passed anyway, okay. One abstention, sorry. Anything else to come before us? Yep.
Now, I'm going to be really quick because I'm on borrowed time here, but for 20 years, the surf clam ocean quahog fishery has had a prohibition from fishing on Georgia's Bank for paralytic shellfish poisoning. The dredges haven't been allowed on Georgia's Bank. There has been a change in the protocol that has addressed paralytic shellfish poisoning. And earlier this month, the Fisheries Service put out a proposed rule to allow the surf clam ocean quahog fishery access to Georgia's Bank, including Cultivator Shoal and the majority of the area between Closed Area 1 and Closed Area 2. The proposed rule was put out after the Habitat Committee had their September meeting, and the comment period closes before the Habitat Committee will meet again. So the Habitat Committee for the New England Council will not have an opportunity to put comments in to review this proposed rule and roll back a 20-year closure. And so the surf clam ocean quahog dredges will be back on Georgia's Bank if this goes through. I'm here just to ask that the council request an extension of the comment period to allow the Habitat Committee, the Habitat PDT, to review this before access is granted to Georgia's Bank, Cultivator Shoal, all of those areas in between the closed areas. I think it's warranted, and the expertise that's in this region, since it is Georgia's Bank, it's not your fishery, but it certainly is your habitat, that is necessary and well warranted to let the experts have a say. Thanks.
Council, without objection, would have the, have Paul send that request in. Let's see, everybody going this way. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Any other business? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Segler. I'm from Eastwest Technical Services, provider of observers and monitors for groundfish fishery. I just would like to indicate that we got a big problem with the cancellations. As much as we understand the cancellations for a small fleet and was unavoidable because of the market weather and in other reasons, I believe that would be a better involvement of the sectors, fishermen involved and then managers to help us. It's really difficult to manage when we got a cancellations up to a 60%. There's one serious problem which could help and increase efficiency. The other problem, and I try to be really, really brief, is a problem with what we call no calls, no shows. 2 years ago, one of our observers drove to a Portland dock. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. She fell asleep. Then she wake up, see the lights of the boat, start driving toward the boat. There was a water. She just quickly get to the back doors, escape from a sinking car, get to the ladder, and see the crew help her. Another incident, there is a snowstorm in New England. The observer didn't receive any call back from a captain, from a management, and is going to Point Judith, Rhode Island. He waits over there, snowy, nobody there, dangerous conditions, no one there, no one show up, and he's coming home. Incident in Scituate, Massachusetts. The observer is going to the boat, sleeping on the ladder, low tide, falling down. Thanks God, just bruises and scratches. And he went on a trip, crew helped him, everything was with a happy ending. Now, if we have an obligation to deploy observer when there is no call back from a fisherman confirming, what if the observer will fall down, sleep on the dock, and will be nobody there to help? It's a constant danger, and those type of incident I'm asking to eliminate somehow. I know it's difficult. I know there are sometimes the fishermen I see fishing and doing what they're supposed to, and they don't have the time to call back. They don't have even a possibility. But maybe somehow we could look into the problem because there's a safety problem. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? I guess that's it. Meeting is adjourned. We'll see everybody in November.